Hello and welcome to another episode of the DevRel Book Club. I'm Ramon, and as always with me is the wonderful Matthew. How are you, Matthew?
I'm very well, thank you, Ramon. How are you?
I'm very well as well, thank you. And also a big thank you to our sponsor, Common Room, for making this episode possible. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, and if you want to find out more about Common Room, which is a data platform and a kind of an intelligence platform for your community, you can go to commonroom.io. So Ramon, what are we covering today?
Well, we have the joy of having with us Amy, who will be talking to us about the book Engineering Management for the Rest of Us by Sarah Drasner. Super excited to have you. Thank you so much. I'd love it to ask you, if I may, please, to tell us a little bit about yourself and what, you know, where you're working and what kind of stuff you're doing.
Thanks. I'm Amy. I work with Adyen as a developer advocate. I work as an internal developer advocate, kind of special that way. Most of my responsibilities are internal facing. So think of how the developer advocacy traditionally is external, working for the developers that use the company's products. But my team's responsibilities are targeted within. So it's more inside. Yeah, we are looking in basically.
Why this particular book then? Because Engineering Management for the Rest of Us by Sarah Drasner is the book we're covering. Ramon, thank you very much. And this is one of those topics that I don't think we talk about enough in developer relations, is how do you go from being an individual contributor to actually running a team? And for a lot of people, that feels like a natural progression, but actually they're entirely different jobs. So why this book?
Yeah, very much like you said, Matthew. For a lot of people, it feels like a natural progression. But I am a little passionate about thoughtful leadership. I'm passionate about how we can be more intentional with managing experiences, because I understand that engineering management actually defines how people experience a company, how they experience a team. It's very, 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 it's the line is very, very direct. Like how I experience my company is very much how I am managed within my company. So I'm a little passionate about having us have these discussions about how we can be more thoughtful in leading teams and how the skills maybe differ. Might not be too different, but maybe differ when we are considering going that career path from individual contributors to managers. And of course, DevRel does have a manager's path. So we start as DevRel practitioners, individual contributors, and there's also that path to also be a manager, and we are also engineers. So it just sounded like a no-brainer. The book was quite helpful.
I really appreciate you saying that, Amy. And I think it's that thoughtfulness that not only goes into leadership, but I really noticed, not to pick your words, but how thoughtfully this book was laid out as well. Especially like full context, like I have never managed myself. I've been a manager myself, but I gotta say this book kind of made me feel like, maybe my approach to working with people, maybe, you know, that sort of like human thoughtful side, maybe it's something that I can, it made me think I can do it, which was, I mean, you know, props to Sarah for that. Making me believe in myself is like no small feat. But seriously, I think and the way it's laid out, and it brings in so much humanity. It's easy, it's also, you know, very, very a very smooth read as well. You know, it's well typed out. It's got great typography. It's got the layout is just very. It's one of those books that you read and it feels like you're just coasting through it really, really well, but also like absorbing so much information.
Yeah. Do you want to know what I appreciate about it? Is it's short. right? And it doesn't waste a word. So the way that Sarah structured it is she'll kind of teach something and then give you a couple of examples, and then that's the end of the chapter. There's no, oh, and back in the day when I was blah, blah, blah. And, you know, some books go into a real yarn and they go into a lot of detail to illustrate a very small point. There's none of that. This is lean and to the point. And I think when we were discussing it previously, Ramon, when we were both reading the book, I think you said it was dense, but not in a way that was kind of unpleasantly dense. And I kind of think that's a good way of describing it.
It's a really packed book. I think, just like you both said, it's human, right? It's the thoughtfulness is what I really enjoy about it. And I also like how very practical it is. Right, there are tips that you could just pick up immediately. You don't have to think. You could just pick them up immediately and then implement them in how you manage or how you're thinking about managing people. I really agree with that. It was a very good read. In fact, I'd read it twice because I kept going back to it. Yeah, so it's really, really a good book.
I really like what you said, Amy, about being something actionable. There were so many sections of the book where I was like, hey, wait a minute, I can start doing this now. Even as an individual contributor, I was like, oh, it kind of makes me feel like how to be better managed as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It does.
That's interesting. So you're saying, sorry, Amy.
That's fine.
Okay. It's interesting that you say, Ramon, that it makes you feel like it's easier for you to be managed. I that's really interesting.
Yeah, it kind of made me take a look back and be like, how can I make being managed easier for my manager? That's what I meant to say, if I could formulate a sentence. Yeah, no, it was cool.
I kind of like the title, For the Rest of Us. So I identify as the rest of us in that title. So yeah, it's kind of easier, like you said, Ramon, to take on being managed also. You can see it both ways. She covered both perspectives. You could actually see it from the perspective of being a manager or being managed. And it's, yeah, quite dense, like you said, packed. Very good.
So let's look at one of those, one of the themes that covered in the book. And let's start with values. So I really like how Sarah sets this out. You know, I've been thinking about company values a lot personally recently. And this is probably really obvious to everyone else, but I really liked the realization I got from reading this was that values are a shortcut for scaling a company. They're the kind of the medium through which a company can grow without losing the thing that makes it that company. And so Sarah mentions something about she gives an example of someone who worked at Rackspace. And back in the day, Rackspace's mantra, I guess their core value was fanatical support. And Sarah describes in the book a meeting where people were asking at Rackspace, well, is this fanatical? And honestly, if I'd have been in that meeting a few years ago, I think I'd have felt a bit awkward, because that just sounds a bit too much like kind of cult-like thinking. But then the way that Sarah presents it, and she demonstrates the practical value of values, I think actually that clicked for me, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. And so I really like the way that she talks about values then. Amy, has that been something that you found useful from the book?
Absolutely, I did. I think it was an underlying principle or concept throughout the book. So I like that she handled it or addressed it first, because it kept coming up in conflict management and feedback and, you know, one-on-ones. She kept, you know, bringing it back, you know, remember the values. And I like the way she layered it. So at a very deeper layer, there is the value of an individual like me who is being managed. Then there's the team values, you know, defining that or making others aware or the team aware about, okay, this is the values that we will hold there as a team. And then there's the company values, you know, so, and then how they all intersect in various spheres. I think it's very, very, very useful to have that in mind in dealing with humans. You know, it's engineering management, but it's really human management. So I like that it was addressed first before getting into, like, you know, the other concepts that were actually addressed. I kind of also have done a workshop. She mentioned about how doing like a values workshop. So I have a therapist who made me go through like that values workshop some years ago. And, you know, she also mentioned how values sometimes evolve. Sometimes they change. They change to something. You have core values that change or maybe veer off to different things. And I found that useful, actually, talking to myself and saying, okay, yeah, these are the values I hold there. And even with dealing with which company I should work for instance, you know, my values come in play, or in dealing with addressing an issue, my values come in play. So definitely I see very, very, very useful tips in valuing values.
I love that. And it kind of reminds me of how that human side, you know, how you need to like essentially sum up this sort of stack of values in order to make somebody working at a company. And especially this, I find something very prevalent in developer relations where, you know, a lot of our work revolves around those values, not only internally, but also externally. But going back to management, Amy, one part that really stood out to us was that of trust and vulnerability. You know, those of us that have thought of perhaps going into management have had here and there parts that they were, okay, I'm going to just say it, it's me. I've been a little bit nervous about, for example, what are the things that I can do to do a good job and like do well by the team that I would potentially manage, right? And one of those is this thing of like trust and vulnerability, which I think could go into like transparency and picking the right layers for that. I'd love to know how has this impacted you and how you look at your work in DevRel?
Yeah, I mean, the DevRel work, I think trust cannot be, it's not something you can do away with. You have to have developers trust you. First of all, they have to have some kind of confidence in you to be able to really manage DevRel experiences. And also, I think trust also plays a very good, important role in making people grow in growth. So there is confidence, there is an atmosphere. When there's trust, there's an atmosphere where people are able to, you know, show their, you know, true selves, authentic. They can be authentic in any environment, and then they can see steps in how they can grow. They can, you know, pick up easily learnings or quick ideas on how to grow. So I've seen that. Oh, I'm sorry, I should mute that. I hope that didn't I got a message from work. So I think yeah, it plays a very huge role in DevRel, trust. Even internally, I've seen how, you know, you have to build trust with developers to have them say, okay, yes, this initiative that we are going to gain some confidence in it, you know, that usually it's trying to help them see the why, you know, trying to help them see why we are picking up an initiative and why we should do that. And they have to have some trust in you, you know, to believe that, okay, yes, this is exactly what we should be doing, and this is the direction we are going in. And it goes also into vulnerability within the team. I think it's very, very, it's a very useful, very important point.
So vulnerability as a manager is a difficult one, I think, because you know, I wonder if you can be too vulnerable, because your job as a manager is to some extent to protect your team from the things that would make it harder for them to be effective in their role at its most basic. And so if you're vulnerable, then, you know, that's good for being a human being, and it's good for building trust. But also, I think I've worked with people, managers, who, if I'd been a different personality, they're, you know, frankly, a couple of them overshared at times. And I, that was fine for me. But I know that, you know, perhaps at earlier stages in my career, I might have started freaking out about things that they told me. And so I wonder, you know, what is the line to tread? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it differs basically depending on context. Just like everything in text, it depends. It really. But I would like us to see vulnerability. I mean, there are other limitations, right? Because if you consider the whole context, some people have to consider things like identity, for instance, being a woman in a majorly male field, being Black or a person of color, and all that. Those identities actually intersect in how you present yourself in management and how you manage your environmental people. So there are other things to think about, but I would like us to see vulnerability, or I see vulnerability more in terms of transparency, more in terms of how I work, making it open. Like this is it. This is how we are moving, and this is what I think. You know, we should move in this direction, and also having it mutual. So you're transparent, I'm transparent to you about how I work, and transparent to you how I feel like our direction should be going towards, and then seeing the other way. So to me, that's more vulnerability. I mean, there's a personal angle to it where people, you know, get very, very comfortable with you and want to go more personal. I think that's fair. There is some connection, I think, you can pick up when people are more comfortable with you to get even very personal. I think you can use that. She also talks about boundaries, about how you can build boundaries. So I think that might be a point to also pick up and say, okay, yeah, you can enforce that. But I see vulnerability very, very much. It's almost synonymous with transparency for me. That's how I see it. Like when I'm doing work and I feel like it's moving in the right direction, I'm saying, yes, we are doing well. When I'm doing work and I feel like, yeah, okay, it's not exactly what we thought it was, I can fess up and say, yeah, okay, I thought this was what was going to happen, but right now it's not working this way. I can't be transparent enough, or, you know, to say, yeah, it's not exactly what we expected, but yeah, this is what's happening. So to me, vulnerability is like interchangeable with transparency that way.
But is transparency a luxury that we have during the good times? A lot of our friends and colleagues in DevRel have been through layoffs and similar situations recently. And I wonder, as a manager, you know, that puts you, often you're given privileged information. And as a human being, you want to say, go and apply for jobs now, get your resume polished up. But as a manager, you have a responsibility kind of two ways. You have the responsibility, I guess, to the company and to your people. I wonder if transparency is something that only really works when everything's going smoothly.
I really don't have an answer to that. I've actually been in situations where, me being managed, I've been in a situation where my manager called me up and said, okay, yeah, this is where the company is going. For your safety, I think you should start, you know, ramping up, you know, all of that. And I felt it made me build so much confidence and trust in that person, because I felt like he had my back. Like, this is exactly the person I want to be in meetings talking about me. You know, I felt almost being sponsored, you know, like this is the person. Yeah. So I can't talk about it the other way, but I feel, yeah, probably it's a luxury for good times, transparency. But yeah, I don't really know. What do you think, Ramon? How would you say?
Yeah, I've been caught in a mind loop trying to figure that one out, because there's a degree of responsibility towards your team that I think is also due. Because, like, it could, you know, Matthew, how you said, I mean, just to provide a different perspective, you know how you talked about, like, you have a responsibility not just to your team but to the company as well. And in that sort of inverse way, if there's an aspect, if there's a component in your team that's you know, causing friction, you also owe it to the work that you're doing to figure that out. And then I think transparency, with of course a lot of discretion, plays an important role. So I don't know if I would say it's a luxury for the good times, because I feel like, and maybe, I mean, of course, the degree of transparency, sure, there is going to need to be some. I think it falls down to being discreet and respectful as well. But I think that when responsibility is due, then transparency is key in the bad times as well. You know, Amy, you also made me think about, first of all, thank you so much for beating me to the punch. There's a moment where I was like flipping to the books, like, what chapter was setting boundaries? It was chapter 22. Because I think that's such an important component to vulnerability. And I think that's where the balance comes in. Because, and something that I find a lot in developer relations as well, is it at a bird's eye view level, a lot of it involves putting yourself, your personality into, or, you know, your spirit into your job. And setting those, and this is especially for marginalized folks, this becomes a lot trickier to navigate. So I think you know, stating outright, listen, be vulnerable, but set boundaries. Protect that core component of you that can be that can afford that, so that you can afford that vulnerability. And I think that sort of that balancing is quite critical. So I really appreciate you bringing it up.
Yeah, it is very, very important, I think, to set boundaries. And the truth is, if you don't do it explicitly, you are doing it implicitly. So boundaries would always be there, but it's just they sometimes are not really defined. So if you don't do, like, explicit, you know, setting boundaries explicitly, they are already set. They're already there. You just haven't given, like, some word to it, or given some awareness to it, basically.
I'd encourage people to read the book, but I'd love some practical examples of boundary setting for those that haven't read the book.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I would have to think of one right now.
That's fine. We can skip this if you like.
Yeah.
The reason I mention it is just because it's something that sounds very, very good in the abstract, but I'd love to think about, you know, as a manager, what sort of boundaries do I need to set? Is it that, are we talking about, you know, maybe not, you know, a lot of teams, alcohol is a big part of the culture. You know, maybe it's taking a step back from taking part in that kind of thing, because you need to maintain your dignity and your authority, because I think there is a weird line. You know, particularly in tech, you kind of everyone's trying to get along in a friendly way, and there aren't, yeah, you know, there are hierarchies, but there aren't. It's not like a traditional workplace where you have to, you know, lift your cap to the foreman or something like that. You know, we a lot of us work in quite flat hierarchies. And so as a manager, you know, I've seen people fall into the trap of completely erasing the boundaries. And then when it comes time to pull someone up on something, or even get into a disciplinary situation, they've lost their credibility and their authority. But at the same time, as a manager, you know, you should be able to sing karaoke at the Christmas party or something like that. So I don't know quite where the boundaries lie that we're discussing here.
So if I may, I think I can think of a couple of examples. One less related to DevRel is, for example, with community leadership. I have thought of myself as somebody who can take, say, a negative actor acting out towards me. But because we have a code of conduct, I need to outright say, I'll take it, but for the community's sake, I need to say, hey, not cool, you know, enforce that code of conduct accordingly. But I think as a person, I would have the tendency, like on a personal side, I would have the tendency to be like, I'll just let it slide. Right. So I think that's the sort of, and I mean, that's kind of related, but on a more working and developer relations sense, I think when it comes to things like being responsive on messaging platform of choice, you know, if I message my manager at, I don't know, 10 p.m. their time, I know they're not going to get back to me until the morning, which is a good thing. That's a boundary, right? Same goes for taking time off. Same goes for saying, for example, listen, I'm kind of swamped right now. Let me get back to you. I'm really like, sorry about that. And I think those are these kinds of boundaries. I think it would be overdoing it to say something like, be the change you want to see. But I think setting that example for your team helps you also enable them to set those boundaries that you want them to set, if that makes any sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely, it does. I was also thinking about in terms of, so there is also the tendency to be dragged here, dragged there, to set up initiatives here. You know, you want, in DevRel especially, everyone wants your input here, there, you know. So I was thinking of setting boundaries in terms of, okay, this is the direction our team is going. And I think she also mentioned about saying no, right? Okay, so this is the direction our team is going. And so if you are contacting us for this particular thing, it's okay to say, okay, we can't go this direction right now. So we would have to give you a no. But on a personal level, it's also very, 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 it's a balancing act on a personal level to set boundaries. Ethically, especially, it's always somehow not so clear sometimes to people. I was thinking in the sense of setting boundaries professionally, setting boundaries to say, okay, this is what we are doing. This is exactly the pace we are going. This is the direction we are going. And if we want to scope out, we'll have to do that after we are done with what we are doing, what direction we have already set out to do. Personally, boundaries also work very well in the case of someone being, you know, maybe too open or too, I don't think there's anything like being too open, to be fair, but in the case of someone being, you know, very, very too TMI, leading like too much information to you, you know, so setting boundaries to say, okay, I understand that we have this connection, but for a work setting, can we be more, you know, can we make it more professional, make it more that we are talking about work. We don't have to talk about work all the time, but we have to set some boundaries to say, okay, we can't diverge towards this angle for this meeting. Or I mean, like, I feel like boundaries, it's, you can address it in so many ways. If you have someone on your team who is prone to doing that, sharing too much, you could have, she talked about setting meetings also. There could be just meetings where you share, you just want to share. And you set that up with that person and say, okay, this time is the time that we feel like we can just, you know, chit-chat. It's a chit-chat, so we can do that. But we have set meetings where we have to focus on work, or focus on something that we are doing direct for on the job. And that way you are setting a boundary. You are setting like your own mental space. Okay, this time I have for this, this time I have for that. I mean, it sounds very robotic, but yeah, I think it helps in helping people to see that, yeah, this is where you are at this particular point in time.
So one of the things that you touched on earlier, Ramon, was negativity in a community. But I've certainly worked in teams where they end up in a bit of a negativity spiral. You know, someone's not feeling appreciated, or they don't feel aligned with the company goals, or you know, maybe the company is doing the wrong thing. And, you know, misery loves company is the phrase, and it's a cliche, but it's kind of true. And so one negative person in a team can end up spreading negativity. And that's something that Sarah covers in the book. And she talks about this thing of the undoing effect. So how can you work towards undoing that negativity? I just think that was a really key thing to be aware of as a manager or a potential manager, is that the reality experienced by the people in your team is a product of the inputs that they put in. So if people do start to become negative, then it becomes a cycle of negativity. It's not, and it's for you as a manager to acknowledge that it's happening, and then address the causes of it within your power to do so. Because if, you know, most people aren't being negative just because they want to ruin everyone's fun. It's coming out of something else. And so I think it is a really key part of being a manager to understand where that's coming from, and then find a way out of it so that the team doesn't spiral into inability to do anything because everyone's so demotivated.
Yeah, the motivating angle of being a manager is very key. Team morale, culturally, is really, really key. And I think I love the way Sarah addressed it, because as managers, I feel it's key to make sure that your team is happy. She also addressed humor, right? Teams that laugh together actually healthier. And I think that's actually really, really true. I found that most of the teams that I have been with, that we could, you know, have very easy laughs together, where we have humor together. It also creates the environment of psychological safety. You know, you could just be, you know, easy around people in the team. So I do think it's important. And I think it was a key point also in the book about addressing negativity, addressing it.
You know, this kind of reminds me of how lately in my work, sometimes I notice that, like, or lately, or, you know, at times during work when there's been a little bit of like a negativity cliff, let's call it that, where it's like you're almost going to go into that spiral, where I found that. And reading this book helped me with it, to sort of just like try and inject a little bit of like joy, humanity, of like letting go, you know, taking advantage of some of the things that I can provide, specifically my really bad CSS, to just like, hey, come bike, you know, come, you know, paint the bike shed with me, and just that is, you know, like give me lots of nitpicky suggestions, and let's just go through a cycle. And I think, like, you know, injecting a little bit of, I really like what you said about injecting humor, just occasionally being like, you know, making jokes about how bad my CSS is. I found that sort of like alleviated a lot of it. I and this book really helped me clarify that. And thank you so much for bringing that up. On that note of motivation, so, and this is going to sound silly, when I read it, it wasn't until I read this book that, you know, it dawned on me that it is possible as a manager to help your team architect what their career paths look like, and, you know, how you could help them achieve their career laddering. And because, you know, in my spare time, I will like mentor folks, but it never occurred to me that, of course, that's what my manager does with me as well, right? So, I'm curious, how did that impact how you look at career laddering for developer relations?
Yeah, I think one of the things, key things I took from the book was that career laddering. Because I think for developer relations, in some companies that are just adopting the role, it's not so clear where the career is going to look like. But I think one of the key points was from that chapter was getting input from the people, right? As a manager, sitting down to say, I think she mentioned about drawing out like a 30, 60 day, 90 day, or even 5 year, looking into the future. Sitting down and saying, okay, where do you see you? What do you think you want to be in 5 years? She also brought that back to values and how, you know, that would also tell on what the person particularly values. I think it was key for me in that it's, I mean, we have these ladders. We have, okay, junior, we have senior, we have staff, principal, and all that, or even the manager role. But it's key, I think, to have a vision of what exactly the people we are managing want. Like, it's key to know, like, what exactly do you want in the next 30 days? It would help inform how you can support that person's career. It would help inform how you can, you know, think of that person in the next 5 years, how you can, you know, draw a path or support or sponsor their career. I think it was key for me that there is that awareness. Let it be very known that I care about what your career is going to look like, you know, in the team, and getting the input from that individual. But I also, I think one of the things that has just dropped in my mind now is about how to deal with when team members decide that they no longer want to be in the team. I don't know if you've ever had a situation and how you've had to deal with it when you feel like when a team member says, okay, well, I've stayed in the team. You've tried all your, you know, all your tactics, all your best management skills, but this team member is saying, okay, yeah, I don't think this team is for me. I don't know if any of you have had to deal with that in managing people and how you handle that.
I think the only way to handle it is to have an open, honest conversation and find the best transition for everyone involved. You know, years ago, I had a developer advocate in my team who came to me and said, look, there's a technical writer position in the company. I want to do that. I don't want to be a developer advocate. I've realized, and I want to go and be a technical writer. And so we had a discussion about it. And, you know, in that case, I kind of wished the person had come to me sooner, because, you know, that would have helped with planning the transition. But in the end, you know, it worked fine. They went off and they were happy, and we carried on as a team. So, yeah, I've dealt with that, but it's, I don't think I've got any particular insights other than just create an atmosphere within your team where people feel safe coming to you to talk about things that traditionally might have been awkward. You know, I mean, I'm sure we've all heard stories of people where they express some doubt about whether they wanted to be in a role, and the next day all of their accounts are closed down and they're put on gardening leave and that's it, goodbye. And I think as managers, particularly in DevRel, where it's, you know, from a very selfish point of view, in DevRel, the last thing you want to do is annoy a member of a very small community of people, because we're all going to work with each other again at some point, or know someone who does. So I think just be open and honest and let people feel safe coming to you. Now, you can't control what the broader company policy is, but at least, you know, as a manager, you can decide how you deal with it.
You know, it makes me think of how important that aspect of trust and vulnerability is, not just as a manager, but as a team member where, you know, like you said, Matthew, you wish they'd come to you sooner. Because of course that transparency, that sort of like open-ended conversation can be made smoother, you know? And there's nothing wrong with it, in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with being like, listen, it's going to really stink not having you with us. What can I do in order to persuade you to stay with us, or to, you know, what can I offer, and, you know, try to meet a middle ground. And if that doesn't work, that's totally fine. So I think that that sort of, you know, that transparent knowing of like, that, you know, that you can talk to your manager and tell them like, hey, I'm thinking of taking on this role, or, you know, I'm like you said, Matthew, I want to stop being a developer advocate. I want to go into something else. I think being supportive and, you know, and maybe even asking outright, like, hey, listen, if you know anybody who could take, again, never managed, so I don't know if this is a policy, but it's like, hey, you know, if you know somebody who could take your place, that'd be amazing. Stuff like that. I think it's that communication aspect, which is such a core skill in everything we do.
Yeah. And one of the key words that's throughout the entire book is clarity, and clarity of purpose, clarity of communication is key to being a manager. You know, I've always appreciated, I know I said earlier that there were some managers who maybe shared more than you'd expect on the topic of vulnerability. But, you know, the managers that I've worked with best have had that clarity of purpose. They've been able to communicate and interpret the company's strategy as it applies to our team and to me as an individual. And I think that is great. And if you have a culture of clarity, then everything else, I think, kind of falls into place to an extent. Now, obviously, there's going to be times when external difficulties prevail, but yeah, clarity is important.
Yeah, especially in these times. I think clarity is, yeah, it's very, very necessary. Very, very necessary. And also to avoid burnout. So you don't want your team members just doing things just because. And then at the end of the day, it's not meeting company goals or company general objectives. So I think, yeah, as an engineering manager, I like that theme was across the book. It was clarity. Make sure there is some clarity. Let your team members know, this is the direction we are going. This is our purpose, the purpose of our team. And I like that in some way she kept emphasizing, repeating it, some repetition, you know, highlighting it maybe on the wiki, making it the top link there, so that you could see, you know, when you keep seeing that, okay, this is where we are going, this is where we are headed, you know, you have some focus and you're not just everywhere. You have a way to make sure that your input is very, very targeted. So as managers, I think managers, we do have like a very key role in defining clarity, defining and also repeating it, making sure that, you know, it's because sometimes people veer off and you want to bring them back and say, okay, this is where we are. Yeah, we are going this way and all. I think it's very important in this day, much more important, very important.
Totally. You know, this makes me think how I love what you said about defining clarity, because what a little thought that started cropping up in my mind as I was listening to you too, was overdoing it on clarity to the point of becoming not condescending per se, but, you know, it becoming an issue where you'd have a manager being like, you know, I just want to make it's about delivery. It's about tone, right? Being like, I just want to make sure you understand what you need to do. Like how that's delivered. And that's why I really like what you said about defining clarity, super important. And I think it's something that definitely something I can practice more of. Wonderful. Listen, we have barely scratched the surface of this book. I mean, like Matthew said that I said before, this is a dense book. Like it doesn't look that thick. If for those listening, I'm holding it up and it's maybe a centimeter or two thick. Like, it is extremely jam-packed with really good stuff in it. So I highly recommend checking it out. Amy, is there anything we might have missed from our conversation that you wanted to cover?
I was muted. Yeah, I'm back. I think we covered the major things I also highlighted to talk about. Important, I think, I liked the key notes she spoke about or mentioned about prioritizing in terms of, because it's also a clarity conversation, basically. You have to say, okay, this is what we should prioritize. And even for yourself, I actually like the cadence of how the book, the layout of the book was. It started like from your team and then it ended at you, because like you said, Ramon, you have to manage yourself. You know, you have to manage yourself because you're also managing people. So one keynote I think I would like to end with is I liked how she talked about prioritizing and how you can go about it. I like the practical tips she gave about, you know, giving priority to work that should be done at a particular point.
Amy, thank you very much for bringing this book to us. It was a delight to read and, you know, lovely to talk to you about it. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to follow your work?
I am on Twitter at Amy Strings. I think on the internet, yes, you can find me there. I would try to respond. I'm not so much the social media bread, but yeah, definitely you could reach out to me at Amy String on Twitter if you have to follow up with what I am doing.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
This has been absolutely wonderful, Amy. Thank you for this once again. Thank you, Matthew, as always. And folks, for listening, it's such a joy to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you next time.